The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Once again, good to be with you on this Friday, on this Look Back Friday, the version of The Doctor Is In, where we take previous calls, edited at the adept, capable hands of Andrew Krucek, my producer man during the week, and then, in an effort to be a little more serving of our listening audience, I add to the call in some direction maybe that I couldn't go initially, or broadening out a matter that the caller brought up that we didn't have time to broaden out in the original call, or it was something that needed to be addressed, but given the exigencies of broadcast time, couldn't be addressed. You see, those all sound very altruistic. Sounds like I'm here just to help you out. Well, let's cut through the baloney. Bottom line is, I choose the calls because I want to talk more. There you have it. Hopefully, there'll be something of value within that. Okay. Enough of that. I want to get to the opening monologue. Did you ever have somebody really react, strongly react to something you said, and you thought it was really a benign observation on your part? Probably didn't even have anything to do with them personally. It might have just been something that you thought in the normal course of conversation was a non-threatening thing to say. Maybe you're a grandparent and you're observing your little 6-year-old granddaughter gathering, and your daughter-in-law is there, and you said something to the effect, yeah, I remember when your husband used to act like that. Oh boy, we had to deal with him. Now you're thinking to yourself, I'm just sharing something about the past, about the history. And you find out later, or at the moment you find out, that your daughter-in-law reacts. What? Why is she getting so upset about this? You didn't say anything. To use a psychological phrase, you stepped, you tramped, you stomped on a nerve. She heard you saying that you were criticizing her dealing with this little 6-year-old. You were drawing a parallel to how you handled your son, her husband, when he was 6 and did something like this. And by implication, she took it that you were commenting on her deficiency. Dr. Ray, how are you going to know that? Exactly my point. You can't. That's going to happen. If you have someone who's insecure about some particular aspect of themselves or their existence or their skills, and you say something that is, well, in your opinion, not at all a comment, a threat, a remark, a critique, and they react far beyond anything you would have expected them to react, you're thinking to yourself, what was that all about? Well, if you were a therapist, you probably could sit with them for half an hour and find out exactly how they interpreted what you said. But since you're a normal person, You really don't have time to get into all that. All you really see is the reaction. Sometimes stepping on nerves is, well, it isn't immediate, it builds. A friend of mine once said that if he put his hand on the table and he took his index finger of the other hand and he started gently tapping on the back of his hand. Now, initially, there would be no effect. He could probably tap 1,000 times before he'd start to notice a little bit of soreness, a little bit of irritation. But conceivably, if he tapped for, let's say, 5 hours, the skin would probably break, and there would be some kind of callus forming on the surface of his upper index finger. Given enough time, there would be damage, and continuing to be severe damage. Well, sometimes when people say relatives or friends have gotten angry at me, something I said, which I just don't understand it. I didn't mean anything by it, and I apologized for it, and it still didn't make any difference. Probably what happened was the finger tapping over the last 1, 2, 3, 5, 8 years. You said things, and again, you didn't do it on purpose. You didn't try to be mean. But you said things that they silently took offense at. And they build, and they build, and they build, and they build, and they build. And the back of their hand is now very raw. And you said something that you thought was just fine. There's no problem here. And that was what broke the relationship. Or that's what severed the relationship temporarily. I have seen this so much where people will say to me, I've got a friend who no longer wants to talk to me or no longer wants to be around me, or I got a son-in-law who's just decided I can't really go over his house anymore, or I've got a brother-in-law or a brother who just hasn't talked to me for 3 years. I don't even know what I did. Probably the buildup of things that you didn't know you said. You didn't know how they were going to be interpreted. But keep in mind, if somebody's insecure, if somebody is self-doubting, if somebody is hypervigilant to anyone saying anything about them that just is seen as a put-down, it builds. And at some point, there's the reaction far beyond anything you thought. And sometimes you didn't even say anything. They just ultimately decided, I don't want a whole lot to do with you anymore. And you're left wondering, what happened? What is going on? Well, I suppose, and this is a hard exercise because you can't really know what you said, where, and how that got them upset, because it's their prickliness. So, yeah, when people react, take it from a shrink. You really can't know how they interpreted it. And I think as a Christian, from our perspective, we have to be real careful about how we interpret what someone says. We got to give them more of the benefit of the doubt, or otherwise we're going to become the people on the other end who all of our nerves are raw and we're always looking for offense, and we're saying to ourselves, maybe it would be better if I just got him out of my life. Dr. Ray.
On the Doctor is In.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, the program The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Television show, Living Right with Dr. Ray on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network, all over the place. Some 140 countries, although I don't understand if they don't speak English there. I suppose I could, I know it's been on, it's in Australia, so when I do the tapings in Australia, it's very different. I have to be linguistically sensitive. Hello, what a walk about. I get Matt Frad to come in and translate for me. Okay, this is Look Back Friday. Take previous calls. I'm looking at one right now. And some of these calls are from a few months back. So I'm not altogether completely clear on why it was selected. That usually becomes obvious to me as the call unfolds. Michelle from Texas has a teenager in counseling, probably individual counseling, or sometimes what happens is the counselor will see not only the teen, but then part of the time the parents and the teen, and then sometimes just the parent. So Michelle is finding out one of the things that I've seen oftentimes among therapists doing counseling with teens. I'll let Michelle tell you. The counselor is telling your daughter to do what?
Well, so we sit in, my daughter and I, we sit in the counseling session together because it's over the computer since we're not going in. But when I called in, I thought she was Catholic and come to find out she's Christian. And I wanted somebody that has our same beliefs because I tell her in everything I do, I need to pray about it. And I need to, you know, ask God first. And of course, everything you said a few minutes ago, everybody around me goes against everything that I say because it goes against what we believe in. So I was talking to Adriana and had the counselor. Well, she asked Adriana to step away, and she just talked to me, and she pretty much said, you have to let her do things because she's 17 years old. She's going to go to college, and then she's going to rebel and do everything she wants to. And I said, well, it goes against everything that we raise her to do because there's a time and place for everything. Meaning, let her, you know, her big thing is, I want to get Facebook. No. I want to get Instagram. No. I'm like, you don't need it. There's a time and place for everything. And she just doesn't need social media.
What did the counselor say when you told her I'm not going to do that?
She told me that I was wrong and I needed to let her do it because she sees it time and time again where the parents who are strict, the kids go and rebel and turn against them.
Yeah,
and I have a hard time where I want to let go, but and I know she's going to go to college, and And I know I have to give her some leniency because she is a good child, but I went to her because my daughter said she was depressed. And I said, well, we need to pray about it. So we did that. And then she's like, I'm sad. And I'm like, well, in life, you're going to have challenges that you're not going to get what you want. And that's okay, but you're going to have to ask God to help you get through that. And the counselor is pretty much telling me to give her more leniency, and I'm just too strict.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to step into a counseling relationship, but there is an overarching rule that the parent is the ultimate decision maker. The parent decides what they want to do, and if they disagree with the counselor, and I've had many parents disagree with what I've said, and I acknowledge it. I say, well, that's your right as the parent. I can only tell you what I have learned on the basis of my experience, but if you say this is not what I want to do, and I get that a lot, by the way, okay. Does the counselor recognize your right to do that?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I know I listen to Catholic radio a lot, and they were talking about, you know, if your kids have Facebook, get them off of your kids have Instagram, which I've never let my kids have because I think social media opens up another can of worms. And now that she's getting older, she's like, I'm a senior. I should be able to do this. Well, I'm a senior. You know, everybody does that. And I'm like, well, we're not like everybody else, and you're just going to have to deal with that and find friends that are just like you. And I know this world is so tempting. I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but we're just
She may, when she's independent in college, which I hear you're sending her away, which I would be nervous about that.
I know.
You're going to probably have occasion to tell the counselor where you're at with this and ask the counselor, what do you think about this? Do you think that if I would not do what you're saying, then in fact counseling is not something we should pursue? Or are you saying that I have the right as a parent, and you just happen to say as a counselor that indeed, if you don't do this, then it's gonna bite you? I can tell you this, that the dominant idea among counselors is if a parent has strict standards that are out of the cultural norm, then it is automatic the child is going to rebel. That is their mantra. That's not true. In fact, many parents with high standards raise kids with high standards. But, so that's something you have to clear up with your counselor.
Oh, I don't know where to go off on this one. Let me start out at the beginning. Mom said she brought her daughter in because she was depressed. First of all, quote-unquote, depression is rampant among teenagers. In many cases, I have not seen it as depression. I have seen it as discontent. I'm not happy with what you allow me to do. I'm not happy with what I'm given. I'm not happy that I don't have what the bulk of my friends have. I'm not happy that I don't have the freedoms that I want. I see that all the time. It's kind of a blasé despondency about my circumstances. I suspect with Michelle's daughter, there's a component of that. Secondly, it has always bothered me when counselors say, if you don't do this, you're wrong. Because there is no recognition there that the parent is the one who decides. I can give you suggestions. You accept or reject them. But I am not able to tell you, therefore. Now, I might go out on a limb and say, here's what I think is going to happen. I do that. However, it is a rampant cliche. And it is thrown, and I talk about this heavily in my most recent book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World. It is a rampant cliche, as I said, thrown violently at parents who are out of the cultural norm. Your kid is 14 and doesn't have a smartphone. What is wrong with you? So therefore, your kid is going to be sneaky and profligate and puke up religion and want no part of all the stuff you tried to teach them. They're going to reject it all. So you've got to decide to allow them to go with the flow of the culture. Otherwise, it's going to bite you. Now, that is a dominant form of thinking now. It's everywhere. It is everywhere. And people with high standards, particularly religious people, who are saying, I don't like the way the culture is intruding on my child's childhood. My daughter doesn't need Facebook. Just because it's there doesn't mean it's automatic that she should have it. Just because 99% of people have it doesn't mean she should have it. To quote Bishop Sheen, right is right even if no one is right, and wrong is wrong even if everybody's wrong. We didn't allow our daughter to have a smartphone. And it wasn't until she was 18 or older that we finally said, okay. What did she do? No, she snuck them. Her friends gave them to her. Her friends told her, your parents are psycho. She didn't handle it well. And she looks back at it and she admits it. She acknowledges it now. She's 21. She looks at it and says, yeah, I did what I could to get one because I thought it was my due. But she goes, I see now why you did what you did, because I was just not trustworthy. Yeah. So, does that mean that we were wrong in not giving her a cell phone because she went out subsequently and got three, four more? No, no. It just means we made a decision and there were repercussions. I will tell you, my experience is the majority of counselor types, and this is more so among counselors, I think, than psychologists. Majority of counselor types typically see the parent as the one who needs to be more flexible. That's in large part because if they see the child individually, the child complains about the parent. And parents will ask me that. They'll say, will you see my child? And I'll say, well, if I do, you got to understand something. Your child's going to come in here and I'm going to charge you because your child's going to badmouth you. And then I'm going to try to convince your child not to badmouth you, which isn't going to work. But you're going to pay me for that. I said, I'd much rather work with you to see what we can do to establish maybe a little bit more of your own parental confidence, a little bit more of your supervision, a little bit more of a stiffened spine to stand against that culture and all the people telling you how wrong you are. And I think that's what Michelle ran into. And I think that the dogmatic way that a counselor oftentimes says that, the child will rebel. You know the problem with that kind of reasoning? Whether a parent is strict or not, in our culture, a sadly high percentage of kids, maybe temporarily, reject what their parents tried to raise them with. And drift toward the culture. Culture is very powerful. Culture is very seductive. The culture is overwhelming. So I've seen very loose parents who have watched their kids, quote unquote, rebel. Why? Because the kids want to do it the way the culture says. The parents are not in wavelength with the culture. So this idea that if you have standards, and if you set them, and if you enforce them, you're asking for rebellion is nonsense. It's total nonsense. A loving home can have standards. A caring, affectionate home has standards. If your attitude is my way or the highway, punk, yeah, then you're asking for trouble. There's no question about that. But the parents who get accused of this are oftentimes the most loving, caring of parents. Frustrates me.
does the Eighth Commandment demand of us? The Catholic Catechism says this commandment forbids misrepresenting the truth in our relations with others. This derives from the vocation of holy people to bear witness to their God who is truth and who wills the truth. Offenses against the truth, either by word or deed, are fundamental infidelities to God and thus undermine the foundation of our covenant with Him. The Old Testament tells us God is the source of all truth. His word is truth, as is His law. Jesus Christ is the whole of God's truth made manifest. To follow Christ is to live in the spirit of truth, says the Catechism. Jesus taught His disciples the unequivocal nature of truth when He instructed them, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything more is from the evil one." This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christianity is under assault. All around us, we are witnessing the self-destruction of our culture and society.
If we do not examine the conscience, we will forget that it is there. The 20th century is commentary on how that has happened.
In A Crisis in Culture, How Secularism is Becoming a Religion, Father George Rutler looks at the many ways civilization has been ravaged by denying the relevance and very existence of the Creator.
Our society wants everybody to finish the race on their terms. But the race is God's race, and we can only finish it on His race. We are defining our own reality.
But there is hope if we turn our hearts to the Lamb of God. Discover how in A Crisis in Culture, How Secularism is Becoming a Religion by Father George Rutler. New from EWTN Publishing. Now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
I can't get my bosses at Ave Maria at EWTN to give me a raise. They have high standards. I've decided to rebel against their high standards. So what I do is I let the bumper music play longer and longer. Now, given that we have, I think, four breaks and we come in with bumper music, if I jumped in on the bumper music and started talking 6 seconds into the bumper music, I would only get about 30 seconds worth of free time. But if I let that bumper music play for about 25 seconds, so that's 4 times 25, that's almost 2 minutes per show of not working. When over time, it raises my wage. You know, effectively it does, anyway. This is Look Back Friday on The Doctor Is In, where we take previous calls, and they are edited. Andrew usually takes out my badinage, my playful persiflage, in the front end of the call. He goes straight to the nitty-gritty, the meat of the call. And then, as you saw with Michelle from Texas, I have much, 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 much more to say about any call, really. I should have a look back, because there's just more I want to say about looking back. See where we're going to go here. Let's go to, that was a teenager. Let's go a little different direction here. Alex from New York, and it looks like a cultural question, but wherever possible, I attempt to take cultural questions and draw them into something we can learn about ourselves.
My question had to do with a lot of the statues that are being torn down, and we're seeing, you know, across the nation a lot of statues that obviously have Catholic ties or things related to the Catholic Church. And I guess one question I wanted to ask in regards to, like you were saying, how Christians should think about this. What do we do where we get a situation, like Christopher Columbus, where obviously he's a big point of contention with a lot of these statues being torn down and a lot of the protests and things like that. And he seems to be like someone who, I was a history major and I looked at a lot of documents that, it's kind of a gray area,
Alex, you know what you're doing, buddy?
What's that?
You are caught up in what the culture wants you to be caught up in.
Okay.
Because your question you're asking is, do these statues deserve to be torn down? That's not the question.
The question of whether they, quote unquote, deserve to be there is a question in and of itself. What we as Christians can say is they don't, none of them deserve to be torn down. And the reason is that is against a commandment. It is destruction of property that is not your own. You may not like the property. Okay, in our culture, we have ways to deal with this. But to say, I have a rationale, I can make a persuasive case that that guy there should not be there, so therefore I will destroy it. For a Christian, that's just not permissible thinking at all. Okay, so even if there were a statue of a most egregious historical figure from a Christian perspective, we wouldn't have the right to go and dynamite it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, our culture, and this is really ironic, as we move away from God's morality, as we essentially say that the things that were the glue that helped our culture become a stable nation, more so than now anyway, as we move away from that, we look back on people and we say, oh, they didn't have the right approach to life. We're going to judge what they did for their time and place as just totally antithetical to our new morality, what we believe in morality. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder, this is a wild speculation, but think about this, Alex. Some of our current political figures who believe that it is okay to kill a baby even as that baby is being born, who believe that it is okay to let a baby die even after it is born if it was a botched abortion, I wonder if 100 years from now, they'll say, do you believe they actually believe that? Do you believe they actually did that? Tear down that politician statue. There's no way. Now, that's just a wild fantasy on my part because I don't think it'll happen. But judging by the same standards, it should happen. Mm-hmm. If 100 years from now, they look back on the way we kill babies in unbelievable numbers, they're going to say, how could any culture do that? That's like the Inca Indians, I think it was the Incas, in Mexico. Well, wait a minute, you believe they had child sacrifice? Do you believe that? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, nobody would respect that culture. Well, I wonder if they're going to look at our culture the same way. I don't know. I would hope, but I don't know. So bottom line is, you can't tear it down because that's not the way to handle it because it's not yours. I don't care what rationale you offer. I don't care if you say, well, Columbus did this, Columbus did that. Columbus, he was not respectful of indigenous people, and he had this attitude, and, I think he also divorced his third wife. You start doing that, then you make, okay, then it's okay for me to destroy things. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, buddy, the logic will take you to the place where I could go, you know, Alex, you know what he did? Let me tell you what Alex did. Let's torch his house. Let's just torch his house. He deserves it, right?
Yeah.
That's where the logic takes you. Absolutely. And I'm shocked. And I think it's a reflection of our culture. I think it is a reflection of the moral degradation of our culture that we can't stand up as a culture. There's a few voices here and there. But by and large, we can't stand up and say, okay, let's put this to a vote of the city council. Or let's decide through some process that is on the books that we use to reconcile conflict. No. As long as you decide that that's not supposed to be there, just do what you got to do to take care of it.
Yeah, I did most of the talking on that one, as Andrew pointed out, because typically on look back calls, we have the caller do at least 50% of the speaking because they have to bring up matters for me to address. Excuse me. Here's something I want to comment on. Anybody that is a student of history will know that people of other times, societies, have their moral expressions. They do things that to our eyes are quite immoral or quite to be questioned. We look at that. Or, and this I think more often the case, what we no longer see as a quote-unquote sin, they did. Okay?
Small example, our out-of-wedlock birth rate has exploded. And there's all kinds of psychological research that says this is not good for kids. Flat out, not good at all. Absentee fathers have all kinds of untoward repercussions. But we don't. That's not a sin. Now, at one time, it was. And we look back, our culture looks back, on how that was viewed with shame and guilt. And we say, isn't that awful? Isn't that terrible what they did? So we decide that their approach, given our sensibilities about things, was wrong. It's very easy to judge the past. That's dangerous. That's terribly dangerous.
Get more information on today's guest and download the program from the Ave Maria Radio website, AveMariaRadio.net. And when your local radio signal is out of reach, listen live on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can my whole self to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Support for Ave Maria programming comes in part by CatholicCounselors.com. Self-help resources and support from Catholic telecounselors from the privacy of home. CatholicCounselors.com, helping your faith, life, and relationships flourish.
Good to have you with me, Dr. Agarendi, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Let's go and see what Jackie from North Dakota has to say. Now, she's trying to deal with this little one's frustration, but as usual, typically, someone might say, yeah, well, you know, come on, I'm way past that level of my child rearing. Yeah, this is not necessarily related to particular child-rearing questions, or if it is, it can be broadened out. That would be relevant to grandparents or even parents of older children. So Jackie is a little bit shell-shocked by her five-year-old's reactions.
We've failed. We know that. But we're trying to be consistent with timeout with our five-year-old. But the tricky thing that we've been struggling with is when he has to go on timeout, he knows the routine, but he'll scream or argue or say that's not fair and all those things. And then he, you know, gets longer, has blackout or has things taken away. But we're just trying to figure out, like, he gets angry and that's when he starts to do the things he's not supposed to do. And we're wondering, how do we help him to express his anger in a way that's like the right way to do it instead of what he's not supposed to do?
Oh, Jackie. Well, you bend down, get down at his eye level, and you say, I'm really sensing a lot of frustration.
I'm not comfortable with that. Can you go with that? Are there some options that we might attempt here in our win-win scenario? Have you tried that, Jackie?
You know, Dr. Ray, I was pretty sure you'd not say that.
That's why I'm being facetious, my dear. Of course, totally facetious. Let's do several things about your question. Let's parse your question. You called it anger, your little guy. He's angry. How to express his anger. Do you really think it's anger?
Probably more frustration.
Yeah, you go. Good answer. That's right. That's what it is. Little kids really, anger's kind of it's a little more of a complex expression of emotion, you know? The frustration is really what it is. You're thwarting him. You're doing something, or you're telling him to do something you don't want to do. And being five, and can I say that in the overall scheme of things, as a five-year-old, he's probably a bit immature?
He is. He's my smart child who really is logical and reasons through things. So sometimes he's saying that's not fair. It's like, yep, well, that's true, it's not, but it's what mommy said.
Well, when you're five, all five-year-olds are immature. All of them. There ain't a one that ain't. Okay, so that's the thing you got to recognize. Now, you're saying that when I try to discipline him, he resists. He escalates. He gets nastier, right? Okay. My guess would be, unless you have a particularly recalcitrant little guy, which you probably don't, but my guess would be, having talked to so many parents who would come into my office with the same kinds of scenarios you described, Jackie, is that if I bore down on what was actually going on, I would find that in their discipline, it's a little bit hit and miss. It really is. You know, sometimes he carries on and he gets irate and he argues and you argue back with him and you tell him to get back in the corner and then he gets back in the corner and he stays there for a while and then he carries on a little bit more and then you tell him, okay, that's it, you're on blackout, and then the blackout lasts for I don't know whatever. And it's just all over the place. Am I wrong?
You know, we've been really consistent lately, and the mouth is
Stop.
Mentalized.
Stop. Did you hear your qualifying word?
I did.
Lately.
We realized a week ago that we had been...
A week ago, sweetheart. Sweetheart, a week ago. So, God bless you. So, you're right. Up to this point, you kind of has doing what I was describing, right?
Right.
Okay. Not that I have to insist that I'm right or not. All right. So, given that, you are on the very front end of changing things. And with a five-year-old who's been, say, pushing on you for 2 or 3 years and getting more intense about it because he's older and he's bigger and he's smarter and he's going to read you better, now you got to make up lost ground. I would suggest you tell the little guy this. What's his name, Jackie?
Peter.
Oh, okay. The Rock. All right. Peter, tell you what, bud. Here's what we're going to do. When mommy tells you to go to the corner or tells you to stop doing something, if you get mad and you throw a fit and you argue, I'm just going to shut you down. And the next whole bunch of things that you ask for, the answer is going to be no. And then, if you want me to start saying yes, you better go to the corner and stay there quietly until I say it's okay to come out. Now, Peter, that's what I'm going to do from now on. Now, if that doesn't work, well, that's okay because I'm going to keep doing it. Doesn't matter. If you don't like this and you get upset, well, okay, go ahead. But I got to tell you what I'm going to do. Jackie, I guarantee it. It'll work. How do I know this?
All right.
Because you're probably a very loving mother in a very stable home with a kid who's pushing harder on you than so far any of your other kids. Okay. That's fine. He kind of outran your perseverance is what he did. In my first book, You're a Better Parent Than You Think, I had a... kind of a rule of thumb that I used in one of the sections where parents were saying, well, we've done that
and we're doing it, and nothing's changing. The rule of thumb I offered was try something for 1 month for every year that has been a problem. Now, that's not going to eradicate it, but it should make it significantly better. So as Jackie was describing the behavior of little Peter, they said that they did what a lot of folks do and what typically brings a lot of folks to my office, which is I realize this isn't going in the direction we had hoped. Whatever we were doing, whatever the dynamics were between us and the child, it's getting worse. We thought we were doing what you're supposed to be doing, but it's obviously not working too well. So let's say that, let's just say he started pushing on him at age two and a half, and he's five now. So that's, what, 3 years? So 3 months. 3 months of trying something. When we adopted our twins, they were a little over four, both of them. And they had been in a foster care setting where the foster parents they were loving people. They were good people. But they just didn't discipline. There was a dynamic involved where they, especially the foster father, just didn't feel that he wanted to discipline little John. Little John was the apple of his eye, and John was given a lot of liberty in all kinds of areas. When the kids came to live with us as mommy and daddy, after all the visits were done and the kids were ensconced in our home, Johnny was carrying an awful lot of the bratty conduct that had been allowed to bloom, if you want to use that word, for the 3 years or so he was in the foster care home. Temper fits. My wife said, Ray, we really got to get a handle on John's meltdowns. And I said, well, I'm a highly trained professional, honey. Let me study this for a day or two, and I'll return to you with my report. I observed him over a couple of days. I came back and told my wife, I said, honey, I think I figured out the trigger mechanism. What can set John off? She breathed a sigh of relief, you know, happy to have someone of my intellectual experiential caliber on top of the situation. She said, Ray, tell me, please. I said, well, as best I can assess, the trigger mechanism for John is breathing. If he's breathing, there's a chance that at any moment he could melt down. Now, my wife was not altogether shocked at my flippant assessment. However, it did make the case that Johnny had just developed a habit of melting down, throwing fits. So my wife and I approached it with what we called the multi-consequence approach. And I didn't suggest this to Michelle, but she could have done this. You know, the little guy, Peter, gets into an argument with her, or he melts down, or he refuses to take his conduct, or whatever it is. The next five things that he asks for is no. Now, he'll melt down again, of course. Then you reset the clock. So for Johnny, we would say he'd ask for something. We say, oh, Johnny, we'd like to give it to you, but not after a fit like that. We can't give you that after a fit like that. And, of course, he might melt down again, and then we'd have to say, not after a fit like that, which starts over our five. Worked really well. Really, really, really well. Worked very quickly. Several months. But can you imagine if we had not done that? I think Johnny would have gotten bigger and stronger and faster and smarter and more determined, and oh boy. So it was interesting because at that point we had 6, 5, 4, 4, 3, and 1 in our home, and our 6-year-old Andrew and our 5-year-old Hannah didn't do that kind of stuff. They'd been with us from the beginning, and they knew that didn't work real well. And they were shell-shocked by little Johnny. It's like, oh, and they watched. It was like, what are mom and dad going to do about this? But the point I'm making, the point I tried to make with Michelle, is something that's gotten on a roll is much harder to turn around than when it first appears and you deal with it on the spot. It may still take a while to go away, but her son Peter has an image of them. This is how we interact when it comes time to discipline. This is what I do. This is what you do. Now, he can't put that into words. He's not sophisticated enough. But he knows. He senses it. He recognizes it. Just like a dog. A dog will recognize, a dog will sense emotions in people. Dogs aren't verbal, but they pick up. And I think that's what Michelle is going to be faced with little Peter. And it's not anything that sounds uncorrectable. It just sounds like she's going to have to persevere with it because he's already set in motion the way he thinks they should interact. I'm Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me. Physicists are looking for a theory of everything that would unite all the laws and forces of the universe. But when we talk about how the universe is run by laws, we equivocate, for there are two kinds. There are the physical laws that we call natural laws. These describe what is, and people generally don't have a choice but to obey them. On the other hand, laws that govern human behavior are called moral laws. The oughts and the ought-nots from which people pick and choose. Now, while stealing is an ought-not, the consequences of stealing often fall under what is. And while gravity describes what is, ignoring it is an ought-not. Do you suppose such laws have something to do with the theory of everything scientists search for? While we don't understand everything, be assured God does. At AveMariaRadio.net under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of time to do a whole lot. Still have a look back call I didn't get to. Do I want to make any more look back comments on, yeah, I do. Michelle from Texas, who had the teenager in counseling. I was sitting in a meeting once, and there were a whole bunch of us, and there was a counselor in there. The counselor said to all the folks there, including the parents, "We all know that when parents put their standards too high, kids are going to rebel." I didn't say anything. I wanted to say, no, we all don't know that. That's a stereotype. It's the old preacher's kid. You know, the preacher's kid is supposed to be the most profligate kid in the whole congregation. But the fact is, most preacher's kids are pretty good. Most preacher's kids reflect the way they were raised. I find it absolutely fascinating. Now, think about the illogic of that statement. If you're a loving parent now, in an affectionate, caring, stable home, and you're attempting to teach standards and protect your child from input that could really hurt who they are, that's the very thing that's going to cause failure in your parenting. You know, if I'd have said this to my grandfather, if I'd have said, "You know, Pabo, the fact that you raised my dad with high standards, that's your mistake." He'd have looked at me in his fifth grade education
and said, Raymond, what kind of nonsense is that? He would have just thought there's no way anybody could believe that. Okie dokie. Gotta run. Thank you for joining me. Walk with God. God has very high standards, you know. Sometimes we rebel, but it's not because of his standards. It's because of who we are. And when kids rebel, it's sometimes just because of who they are.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.